As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Monetary policy cannot, by stimulating, create permanent jobs, and it can't lift long-run potential growth.
The central thing holding us back throughout this recovery has been lack of demographic growth, and that's not changing anytime soon.
We're creating a boatload of jobs. I mean, we're creating, on average, over 200,000 jobs per month, and that's a lot more than we need to absorb the growth in the working-age population.
Bloomberg Surveillance, your link to the world of economics, finance, and investment on Bloomberg Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Bloomberg Surveillance, Michael McKee and Tom Keene. It's a Wednesday, that important ECB meeting tomorrow. We will brief you on economics, finance, and investment in this hour. The Forex Brief this morning brought to you by Interactive Brokers, winner of FX Week's 2015 award for the best retail Forex trading platform. Visit IB at IBKR.com/Forex. Yen was stronger. Now it's a churn, 112.76. Euro 109.51, just a churn to the market. Sterling was a 142 earlier. Gives back a little. Well, there it is, 142.00 on pound sterling, and dollar showing a little bit of strength, but a churn all in all to the foreign exchange market. Futures down, futures up, futures down, which means the only way to save us towards excitement is David Wilson, who joins us here on the equity market. Pfizer is doing something. I couldn't figure it out.
They're buying back $5 billion of stock.
Didn't they already announce that?
Right, but this is a matter of actually doing it. It's one thing to announce it, and it's another thing to make it happen. And they're doing it through what's called an accelerated repurchase agreement with Goldman Sachs. The dollar amount's equivalent to about a 2.2% stake, and Pfizer shares are up 1.5% in early
trading. Even with the pre-announcement, when they finally announce it, I mean, a legit blue-chip company, it moves the market.
No, it certainly is in early trading today. Then you have Valeant Pharmaceuticals, which is up 3.5%. The embattled drug maker added the vice chairman of Bill Ackman's Pershing Square Capital to its board, along with two other independent directors. Yeah, I mean, you can say that because Pershing Square is Valeant's third largest shareholder with a 6.3% stake. Chipotle Mexican Grill down 3%. The restaurant chain temporarily closed a store near Boston after four employees got sick. The shutdown in Billerica, Massachusetts, was the latest in a series of food safety issues that began in November. Darden Restaurants up 2.5%. The owner of Olive Garden and other chains reported preliminary earnings for the fiscal third quarter that beat analysts' average estimate in the Bloomberg survey. Some analyst calls of note. Ross Stores down 1.5%. The off-price retailer was lowered to neutral at Goldman Sachs and taken off a list of the firm's top picks. All this happening after Ross Stores rose 28% from a low set in November.
Three more. Hat trick.
Frontier Communications down 4.5%. The phone company lowered to sell from neutral at Citigroup, and a couple of internet companies down after being cut to sell from neutral at UBS. Groupon is one of them, down 5%. The other is the consumer review website Yelp, which is down 5.5%.
Do you use Yelp?
I do, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
Mike, do you use Yelp?
I do.
I don't get it.
Well,
I've tried.
Well, it's pretty simple. You just say, I want to find a place that sells a microphone. And you just put in microphones. It'll tell you what the store is.
I use it for restaurants. In other words, if I'm in a place and I don't know what's going on, you look up what's around and figure out, where do I want to eat?
Review Yelp again. What did they do?
Consumer review website. You can put it that way.
Okay.
And say, down 5.5%.
Down to 5.5%. David Wilson, thank you so much. He's a former chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. We'll get to that in a moment.
Do Yelp, and you just type in Arthur Levitt, and you see that he's sitting right next to you.
Yeah, you can. But this time of year, he's getting ready to go bass fishing out in New York Harbor.
Right.
It's 75 degrees today. It's 75 degrees tomorrow. The water temperature is 42.6 degrees in New York Harbor. You can't, just because it's warm out, you don't go bass fishing. They're not biting yet, right?
No, that's right.
They're rather deep.
We're not many weeks away, though.
But
with this kind of weather, the bass will be coming around the Verrazano.
Did you buy a new boat this year? Did you buy something 5 feet longer?
No. Same boat. Same small boat. Full disclosure.
That's great. Well, full disclosure. Arthur Levitt brought along a fabulous note today of a letter from the second chairman of the SEC just before your tenure, 1936, from Mr. Landis. Describe this original letter that he wrote 2 years after the advent.
He was writing to the head of one of the brokerage associations in response to a letter that he got from them, telling them all the things the SEC was going to do, all the issues they were going to pursue, disclosure issues, market issues, setting up an organization to represent the markets. And it was fascinating because almost every one of those issues are still with us today. They talked about qualified brokers, the segregation of securities, registration, prospectuses.
Quote, beating the gun.
What is beating the gun? Beating the gun means trading, front running. It means front running.
Yeah, that's great.
I haven't heard of beating the gun.
Did you ever see them use a gun on the floor of the American New York Stock Exchange?
No, I never heard of it before, but isn't that wonderful? I think we should start talking once more about beating the gun.
The idea here, and it does fold into our politics, is beating the system. And the reason these organized markets exist is so people know they get a fair trade. Does the little guy get a fair trade? I've had so many people the last couple of weeks, Arthur, ask me about the hedge funds and the people moving the markets, oil or whatever, iron ore.
It's tough. The little guy really should be using low expense ratio mutual funds. The little guy doesn't have access to the kind of information that the institutions do, and the little guy knows that. Nevertheless, the little guy trades at a fraction of the cost that his great-grandfather traded at, and I think the little guy is more fairly represented than ever before. But the message of the past, of the Landis observations, is that these are never-ending problems. The issue of transparency, the issue of disclosure, is just as relevant today as it was when Landis wrote that letter. It's a wonderful piece of memorabilia.
Mr. Landis may not be surprised by the length of time it's taking the agency to complete market stability rules. SEC Chair Mary Jo White now says won't get done by the time she steps down next January. Should we be surprised, or is this just what you expect?
I'm not at all surprised. I think that she's been unfairly criticized for not having accomplished more of her mandated agenda, but what Congress did was dump everything on the commission and didn't fund the commission to do everything. I think that Mary Jo has done a heroic job, has established an environment of dignity, responsibility, and care for the investor that I think is awfully important, and she's fought back an alien Congress, particularly the Financial Services so-called Oversight Committee, and I think she's been a wonderful chair.
The shock and awe, which I had, and I consider myself an amateur in this, of Mr. Sanders doing better than good in Michigan. Is this about, with your decades of service to the Democratic Party and in your father's heritage, I might point out as well, is this about Mr. Sanders better than good, or is Mrs. Clinton losing the pixie dust of mainstream Democrats?
In an interesting way, the Sanders phenomena is a parallel of the Trump phenomena. The American voter doesn't want business as usual. If that means Trump, so be it. If it means Sanders, we'll go with it. We don't want same old, same old, same old.
Can Mrs. Clinton adapt to that?
In a sense, but it's something she will have to live with in a campaign against the ultimate anti-establishment figure. Won't be easy. It isn't a lock.
Arthur Levitt, thank you so much. Arthur Levitt is a former chairman the Securities and Exchange Commission, and we look forward. And I don't. When do the BAS start?
The BAS will start probably the first week in April.
There we are, first week of April. Look forward to the surveillance.
Boat big enough fish for report. Tom and I to get on there with you and right. You know, broadcast live.
No, we do it. It's a tradition. We do an hour. Arthur Levitt and Gadabout Gaddis. We get them together and you know, get it done. The fish report. April.
We could sell first that. Week. The Bloomberg Fish Report brought to you by.
Yeah.
And you can do it. You can do the fish report.
Yeah, I'd be very good. Do you realize I get seasick just if the martini swirls a little bit? I'm wondering, Michael Barr, do you get instantly seasick?
You know what? I hate to admit it, yes.
I get instantly, like, boom, yeah. Switch goes off.
Well, I fish, so I'm not.
Yeah, I'm absolutely useless. Michael Barr and I will be fishing at the. Whatever that waterside bar is on East River.
You will have the martinis ready for us.
We will be there. Futures up 9. Dow futures up 78. 10-year yield 1.88%. A churn to the market, but as Michael McKee mentioned, the headline is oil has a bid today. 37.29 West Texas Intermediate, up a good 80 cents. Brent, $40.50 a barrel, up 83 cents this morning.
Time now to check in with Michael Barr for the latest news headlines. Mike.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders will hold their eighth debate tonight in Florida. Last night, Clinton won the Mississippi Democratic primary, but Sanders scored a narrow upset win in Michigan. Clinton has more than half of the delegates she needs to win the Democratic presidential nomination. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump insists there's tremendous positive energy in the party. Trump told NBC's Today, some people have never voted before, and they're voting for Trump. He stretched his lead over his Republican rivals after wins in Michigan, Mississippi, and Hawaii. Ted Cruz won the Idaho primary. Two people have drowned in Oklahoma and Texas as a large storm system moves over sections of the South today. A flash flood warning is in effect for parts of eastern Texas, southern Arkansas, and northern Louisiana. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists in more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom?
Michael, thanks so much. Again, tomorrow, our exclusive coverage, the ECB, with the headlines from the Bloomberg Professional Service. We'll have that for you with the important press conference at 8:30. It's Bloomberg Surveillance.
Market Driver is brought to you by your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealer. No matter what the weather, Mercedes-Benz 4MATIC all-wheel drive brings peace of mind and driving confidence. Visit your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealer for a test drive today.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by Interactive Brokers and CME Group. If you're looking for global futures contracts at low trading costs, look no further. Interactive Brokers is the industry leader. Learn more at interactivebrokers.com/CME Group. U.S. stock index futures, they're higher, signaling more gains for equities heading into the eighth year of a bull run as investors await cues from central banks. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures up about 8 points. Dow E-mini futures up 69. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 15. The DAX in Germany's up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 13 32nds. The yield 1.87%. Yield on the 2-year 0.89%. NYMEX crude oil up 2% or 73 cents to $37.23 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 1.2% or $15.50 to $12.47.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.0950, the yen 112.81. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen Bosco, thank you very much. Well, as Tom mentioned, the ECB meets tomorrow. Mario Draghi, a range of options. You heard Lena Komaleva saying a few moments ago that she thinks helicopter money may be the answer. Ben Emmons from Leader Capital is going to have to trade whatever Mr. Draghi does. So let's bring him in and get the market's view of what's likely to happen and what the impact is going to be. Ben, what do you think Mario Draghi does? And would it be the same thing as something that will have an impact on the markets and help out the Eurozone?
Right. Good morning, Mike and Tom. Thanks again for having me. Well, I think if you look back at the history of what the ECB has done so far, And what there's two things to distinguish there, right? One, the ECB is very good at signaling what it's going to do next, and markets are anticipating. And I did a little quick study on that and saw, like, yeah, the market rallies ahead of this potential announcement, but then the announcement itself is welcomed relatively muted. And you can see this, you know, in interest rates and stock prices and currency, et cetera. If you look at the history change of that, the note I sent you shows that table. So I think tomorrow you have, again, this sort of response where largely market expectations are set at that QE will expand and that they will introduce a negative deposit rate. And then they will look at the details of maybe there's tweaks here and there that may lead to surprise. But I think the background here is, Mike, is that Draghi has to always get some form of compromise among his ECB members for this next policy action. And that means that he is really good at signaling, you know, a potential new action coming. And then as the market responds to that, he can then create this sort of environment, say, hey, look, it works, so therefore let's create this, you know, have a compromise about what we're going to do. Because there's going to be resistance by some ECB members of having much more QE, and others who would argue for less QE, et cetera. Right? So there's that element as well. So I think you're having a tomorrow an effect where interest rates are probably going to be relatively muted.
Right.
I think what I want to watch tomorrow really is how credit markets are going to respond.
Exactly.
To the ECB action.
Yep. You've got a nice workout on that. But what is so important to me, Ben Emmons, is if I look at the German two-year, it's essentially a global proxy of negative rates. It's a vector. And it's basically in one direction. Do you just presume with whatever the strategy is, whatever the orthodox, unorthodox soup that they do, that the German two-year will drive to a new negative yield below negative 0.60%?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Tom. That's right, because, one, that's driven by that deposit rate and then future expectations of more cuts in the deposit rate. That's in that two-year yield. And indeed, you could have a more extreme level of this two-year yield. Because if you look at the history so far of what actually has had the major impact from the ECB's programs has been on that two-year yield in Germany. Right? That one has gone down really dramatically, whereas the euro has been changed.
Right? That's the proxy, the German two-year yield. To review, folks, it's been negative. Let me go back and give you roughly the date where it flipped negative. It flipped negative, about almost positive. Call it November of 2014 within a quick look. What does Mr. Draghi want the German two-year to do? Or does he not care? Because that's what I'm hearing in a lot of interviews.
I think he cares more about the broader impact of that program. If I read back his speech from April 2014 that he had in Amsterdam, where he laid out the framework, he basically laid out 3 points there. He said, we're going to use forward guidance, then we're going to use credit easing with LTROs, and then we're going to use a broad-based asset purchase program to get our inflation more stable near 2%. That's kind of his framework thinking. Now, he's addressed all three components. So I think he's not so concerned about this really extreme negative yield in the two-year German government bond, rather that this impact of his program along those three lines that he laid out in that speech. I think, though, that he is concerned, probably, and other ECB members too, about the constraints the banking system is again facing, especially what we went through in January. So I would think that they would, you know, can always add more liquidity to the system. But moreover, if they want to look more specifically at the aspect of what happened in January, we want to address that because they could derail the other aspects of our program, right? So, yeah, he will care about that negative rate, but he really cares about it in a broader context. If that negative rate leads to 2% inflation and broad-based lending, then it's fine by him, and that's ultimately still their objective. Right?
But there aren't any signs that's happening right now.
True, and I think that's indeed what they would try. What I think they will try to address is that they have seen, like, well, we had some success with a weaker currency and lower rates, but we haven't had much success with credit extension, for that matter. For example, when they introduced what they call targeted LTROs, which is a LTRO program where banks can refinance collateral that's lent to non-financial corporations. That they may look to expand them because that facility is only $18 billion outstanding. It's very small. It never had any kind of success. They may look at alternatives to this, too, that, yeah, credit spreads are still relatively wide in Europe, including bank spreads. that they may make tweaks there. They can purchase corporate bonds. They can buy financial debt. They could do that or signal thereof, right? And I think, again, Draghi is really good about that, about signaling something like that coming down the pike to generate the effect and then get the compromise to actually implement a program like that. So I think all those things are in the works. I'm actually for tomorrow, indeed, really focused on how credit markets will respond to Draghi as he announces this new program, because the QE program, I think, is largely priced.
Okay. Ben Emmons, thank you so much, Leader Capital. As we brief you towards tomorrow and the Draghi press conference, we'll have that, all the details, in the 8 o'clock hour. Tomorrow, futures up 7. From New York, Bloomberg Surveillance.
Counting you down to the opening bell, brought to you by the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever. The Grand Cherokee continues to raise the bar with its luxurious interior and legendary 4x4 capability. Drive one at your local Jeep dealer today.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow, along with Tom Keene and Michael McKee, and that is the sound of the opening bell. It's brought to you by SEI. Imagine when asset management servicing is unconstrained by infrastructure. See how SEI's global operating platform can be your catalyst for business expansion at seic.com/imagine. Stocks higher at the open, the S&P 500 up 0.3% or 6 points to 1985. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.3% or 48 points to 17,018. The NASDAQ up 0.4% or 18 points to 46.67. 10-year Treasury down 13/32. The yield 1.87%. Yield on the 2-year 0.89%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2% or 73 cents to $37.22 a barrel. COMEX gold down 1.3% or $16.10 to $12.46.70 an ounce. The euro $1.0948. The yen 112.83. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. And Karen, like myself, we usually don't quote nat gas, which is important because it is cratered with a 4-day rebound here recently. But I rarely use the word cratered, and yet it works for nat gas. I've begged our crack team. Mike, what's our staff up to, like 80 people? 83?
Maybe 84, 80, but yeah.
It depends. Right. You know.
Some of them were out voting in the primary.
They're voting, yes. They're old enough to vote. Yeah. Anyways, our crack team finally tracked them down. Stephen Shark joins us from the Shark Report. All right now, Stephen, wonderful to have you on. Why is oil up and nat gas south?
Nat gas is down because, or actually it's up. It's, we're essentially at a technical turning point, guys. It is so cheap at this point. I got down to about $1.60, which is what, about $10 barrel oil equivalent. The reason for the bearishness in gas, aside from the little pop that we're getting now, is the fact that the U.S. industrial economy has been, continues to be, will be for the foreseeable future in a steep recession. Keep in mind I'm saying the industrial sector of the economy, hence why we've gotten the pullback. So with natural gas, your only other driver outside of commercial and industrial demand, which is at a post-Great Recession low, by the way, is the weather. And, of course, now we're in the shoulder months. We don't have gas furnace demand. We don't have air conditioning demand. So we don't have power demand on the residential side. So hence why we've had such a precipitous drop. But the funny thing about natural gas is it's the ultimate or the consummate contrarian play. So we were weak throughout the winter. Even if this was a cold winter, on average, we see weakness in gas prices during the winter. And then you tend to see a countercyclical rebound in natural gas once we get into the shoulder months. So perhaps that's what we're seeing right now, a technical bounce, which could also come into being a contrarian trade over the next month or 2 months. Now, with regard to oil, this is the market that's not trading on fundamentals. We've had a significant pop in oil prices over the last 2 weeks, but I'm going to underscore this. This is nothing but a major short squeeze rally. I'll give you a for instance. As of a week ago, according to the CFTC, both bullish speculators and bearish speculators liquidated some of their positions going into two Fridays ago. The difference is when the bulls liquidated their position, they sold one contract. contract. When the Bears liquidated the position, they bought back 82 contracts. So when you sell one contract and you buy 82 contracts, guess what happens to price? And hence, we are now into this significant short squeeze.
How long does it last?
It's a great question, Mike. It could. Now, what's happened here is this rally is driven solely by a liquidation by the Bears. Now, what we've seen now over the past week is open interest beginning to rise. So if the rally to this point was driven by a bearish speculation, if open interest is indeed rising, that could be a significant sign that money, bullish money, is coming into the market. So this could prolong the rebound. So how long? No one's going to be able to tell you that. But certainly we're going through the turnaround season, the maintenance season. So we're buying a lot fewer barrels, physical buyers, because the refineries are shutting down units for maintenance to get ready for the summer. So this is more or less a spec-driven rally. So this could happen until when? Until the end of the turnaround season, when we bring the physical buyers back into the market and some fundamentals are again injected into this market. So, roll of the dice, this could last a couple of more months, could last just another day. It could be, with yesterday's sell-off, it could have already run its course. No one, unfortunately, can tell you that right
now. And to be clear, you're not long oil, because this has been a raging debate. Dan Suzuki with Francisco Blanche at Merrill Lynch suggests prices to 50, and they've got fundamental enthusiasm. Jeff DeGraff, working technically, was ruthless today, looking for a retest of lows and even into the teens.
Yeah, I cannot make the fundamental case. I understand there is the inclination. We're looking at certainly prices are so cheap. But just because prices are cheap doesn't mean that's not a reason to buy. They're cheap for a really good reason. And that really good reason is we are still producing a lot of oil, not only here in North America, but what seems to have driven some of this speculative rally is this idiotic notion that somehow OPEC is going to come to some sort of agreement on a production freeze. I'll just point you to yesterday's ballistic missile test by Iran. There is no way the Sunni side of OPEC and the Shia side of OPEC are going to come to an agreement on production anytime in the foreseeable future. So if you are buying oil on the assumption OPEC is going to freeze production, good luck with that, because that is not happening.
But so far, we put a floor under oil because people are thinking it might. What changes? What happens to get people to believe that you're correct?
Well, at this point, we've already got 517 million barrels of oil in commercial stocks sitting there. That is at the highest level since Babe Ruth was hitting home runs up there in the Bronx. At this point, it's just going to be a wait-and-see game. We have to let this run its course, certainly once we get into the demand season, Mike. So perhaps we're going to have to wait until either the beginning of the summer or the end of the summer after we get through the peak oil demand season, gasoline season, that is, in July and August. Then perhaps, because if you juxtapose today's price path in oil with last year's price path in oil, they're going in lockstep fashion. So in January last year, oil bottomed at about $40, rallied to $60 in May, and went into the summer demand season, and by the end of the summer demand season, oil was at $40 a barrel, and then, of course, at the beginning of this year, it dropped down to basically $25 a barrel. So I could see that happening again. So this rally certainly could continue into the summer, but certainly I'm not expecting a significant pullback in production, enough to compensate for soft demand, and hence why I wouldn't be surprised if this current lockstep again follows last year's pattern.
Very, very, very quickly here. When we say we're up to our eyeballs in oil, are we up to our eyeballs in natural gas?
Absolutely, and that's the bigger issue here, because production is showing no signs of any sort of significant cutback. So, again, as I said, your only two drivers for natural gas essentially are commercial and industrial demand, which is in recession, and then the weather. Now, the difference is here that with natural gas, all it is going to take to get natural gas back to $3 a dekatherm from where it is today at about $1.70 a dekatherm, all it's going to take, guys, is a really, really hot summer. So if you get a sweltering summer in Boston, it's got to be in the northern latitudes also, because it's always hot in the south. So Boston, New York, okay. Chicago have to swelter. If that happens, you'll see a significant bounce in natural gas prices okay. by the end of the summer.
Stephen Schork, we will return. Stephen Schork on oil, one of the great debates of this moment. The market up 45 points.
Time now to bring in Michael Barr for the latest news headlines. Michael?
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much. Vice President Joe Biden says we will act if Iran breaks the nuclear deal. Biden is in Jerusalem today for meetings with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It comes after Iran's news agency says the country fired two ballistic missiles with the phrase Israel must be wiped out written in Hebrew on them. Biden says U.S.-Israel relations remain strong.
It doesn't mean we don't disagree, but you never need to doubt that the United States of America has Israel's back. And we know Israel has our back as well, I might add. It's not a one-way street.
Biden will meet later today with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders will debate again tonight. Clinton won the Mississippi primary yesterday, while Sanders narrowly scored an upset win in Michigan. Donald Trump won Republican contests in Michigan, Mississippi, and Hawaii. Ted Cruz won Idaho. He was the Beatles' other George. Beatles manager George Martin has died. Martin produced some of the most influential Beatles albums. Including Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, George Martin was 90. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists and more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom?
Extraordinary individual.
He was.
It is just album after album of original.
I don't think you'll ever see that again, have you?
Yeah, I don't think so. Absolutely extraordinary. Sir George Martin. This is Bloomberg Surveillance. We're with Steve Schork.
Tom noted the weather. It's going to be in the 60s all through next week in New York. Stephen Schork next on what the temperatures mean for the price of energy.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by National Realty. 30% returns on cash and rented real estate. Find them at NRIA.net. U.S. stocks higher, headed toward an eighth year of a bull run, led by a rebound in energy shares amid speculation central banks will continue to provide stimulus to bolster sluggish global growth. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P 500 up 0.3% or 6 points to 1985. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.4% or 62 points to 17,026. The NASDAQ is little changed, up 3 points to 4651. 10-year Treasury down 10/32. The yield 1.86%. The yield on the 2-year 0.89%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.6% or 57 cents to $37.07 a barrel. COMEX gold down 1.4% or $17.30 to $12.45.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.0951, the yen, 112.89. Valiant Pharmaceuticals International will add 3 new board members, including a representative from one of the drug maker's biggest investors, and expand the panel to 14 directors from 12. Also, BMW predicting only a slight increase in deliveries, taking a cautious approach for a year when it risked losing its lead in the luxury car market to Mercedes-Benz. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen Moscow, thank you very much. Stephen Schork of the Schork Report is with us. We're talking about the price of energy. We talked a little bit about natural gas and how it was a mild winter. Didn't help the price of natural gas. To what extent, Stephen, is oil correlated with the weather?
It's correlated to the sense from the point of course, distillate fuels and the products, so gasoline and so forth. So, for instance, as you pointed out, we had a very mild winter. So that meant in the northern latitudes, you didn't have snow, you didn't have ice, so you didn't have the normal weather demand destruction. So, again, the weather is going to play a difference, certainly in the winter, depending on the road conditions. So the road conditions, for the most part, were very favorable to strong gasoline demand, and indeed, this is exactly what we saw. And so that's also going to impact at this point right now in the Midwest, because we're starting to enter the planting season. So you're going to see an outside outsized gain in demand for distillate fuels. So certainly if we get a rainy spring or a rainy fall, so forth, and it kind of delays the planting or the harvesting, if you're in the fall, that is, that's certainly going to impact your demand patterns. And then, of course, we get into the summer. So from an oil standpoint, it all depends, certainly at points of the year. At some points, distillate fuels are going to lead the market, which is what we're going to start to see in the Midwest. And at other points, gasoline is going to drive the market, typically around the holiday season, of course, and then once we get into the vacation season in the summer.
Well, there you go. Vacation season is coming up. What's the price of gasoline going to be for people who are going to get in the cars? Oh, we got spring break coming up here. Are people going to be obviously prices are low, but where do they go as the driving season picks up?
Well, historically, they're going to increase, and it's going to be a factor of two variables here. Of course, one is the increased demand, more cars on the road, and so the constraints that's going to be putting on manufacturing gasoline and getting gasoline to where it needs to be, of course, at your local pump. But also, it's going to be the factor of the summer-grade gasoline. So right now, we blend for gasoline, or in the winter, you're going to blend for gasoline. That has a different vapor pressure. But once we get into the summer, you're going to have to you'll lower your vapor pressure for environmental reasons. So, of course, to blend for lower vapor pressure, when the 20 or so petrochemicals that go into making a gallon of gasoline, it's much harder. So you'll probably get like a 30, 40 cent increase at the pump. But given where prices are right now, it's still extremely favorable once we get into the summer.
And Stephen Shark is known for hyper-detail reports. We protect the copyright of all our guests. We're not going to send you the Shork report. Contact Stephen Shork. Stephen, in the back of your report, you have a fabulous 8 paragraphs, which is titled, "This is a Tragedy." You rip apart the jobs report, and the arch thing that Mike McKee and I hear from our listeners, and maybe what Mr. Trump hears from his listeners, or Mr. Sanders hears from his listeners, which is the quality of job formation.
Yeah.
You are stunned at the gift of low energy, and we're not creating the jobs we need to create. Discuss.
Absolutely. And when natural gas was at $3, natural gas prices crashed, someone in a discussion I was giving down in Houston asked, well, isn't this the catalyst for a manufacturing renaissance in this country? And I absolutely agreed. And this was a question from a man from a very large steel company. So certainly the comparative advantage that we have over the world with our energy costs and the fact that we are not creating jobs. Guys, by 2018, on the current trend since the Great Recession, there are going to be more people, waiters and bartenders, than there are working in factories and mills in this country. And if we look back at the job creation since the Great Recession, or I should say this last week's jobs report, it was heralded, you know, it was great because we had so many jobs, 230,000 added into the private sector. Guys, more than half of those jobs were on industries that pay $500, $550 a week. That is minimum wage jobs that we are creating. And that's certainly not any sort of engine of growth. And hence why you're getting the bizarre results that we're seeing in the election when Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are getting so much positive consideration. There are obviously a lot of people out there that are concerned. So that is the tragedy. What's going to happen when oil and energy prices either move higher or the rest of the world catches up to these low prices and we lose that advantage? If we can't make hay now when the sun is shining, what happens when the clouds appear? And that is indeed a very scary thought for me.
You know, I look, Steve, at the job dynamics. And, folks, I can't convey the amount of mail we get when the job optimists, I'm going to call them, show up. Part of this is incentivizing investment. If we incentivized energy investment, would it mean a thing? To me, it wouldn't. I mean, the industry's basically in chaos until they sort the new price out, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, I know. Absolutely. So
you're not going to help.
But what's going to happen now? Now, from a job standpoint, those jobs aren't coming back. We've lost 150,000 jobs, if not more, in the energy sector. And these are jobs that pay $1,400, $1,500 a week. I mean, these are the best paying jobs out there. So unfortunately, those jobs will come back, but not nearly to the degree that we've lost it. But in the end, what we're seeing now is this retrenchment, forced retrenchment on the U.S. energy industry. And this is something that I can't imagine that OPEC did not see this happening. This industry, the North American industry, is going to come out of this depression in their sphere of the world, and they're going to come out of this that much stronger. They're going to come out with, once we get through the M&A activity, once we let these debt-laden E&Ps, that is, if the banks ever let them crash, those assets are going to be had for cents on the dollar. The productivity, the efficiency gains are going to be that much greater. The margins are going to be that much fatter, and hence why I'm doubtful that we'll ever see $70 oil at any, which was the breaking point of the bear market. I doubt we'll ever get there at any point in the foreseeable future, because this industry is going to be that much better. And guys, let's not forget the other reason why OPEC, especially, wants low oil prices. The price inelasticity of demand for gasoline is falling because what I'm calling it the Elon Musk effect. You have substitutes into this market. So whereas we will get a popping demand, that demand is not going to be commensurate with other pops of demand we've seen in the past, because now I have alternatives. The Tesla, drive down Putnam Avenue in Greenwich. When I lived up in Greenwich 20 years ago.
Which is America, let's be honest.
Right. But the status car on Greenwich Avenue was what? The Humvee, which got like 700 yards to the gallon. Drive down Greenwich Avenue today, it's the Tesla. So inside of one generation, we've completely turned the demand economics on its head, and the genie's out of the bottle. So we're not going back. And wait until you see the impact of driverless technology on inelasticities. So OPEC is aware of this. They're fighting a losing battle. They're just trying to prolong it a little bit more.
1 minute for our Canadian listeners. Give us an update on how Canada is faring with $40 Brent crude.
It's brutal. As bad as it is in the U.S. oil patch, everywhere from North Dakota down through Houston, you go out through Canada. And Canada, their biggest problem is they're at the end of the pipe. So the complete dynamics, what's happened in natural gas has decimated the Canadian natural gas market, because you've got so much gas being produced in my home state here in Pennsylvania and right across the border in eastern Ohio with the Utica Shale that we've completely changed the epicenter of the Canadian natural gas market, because we're exporting, and those exports are going to grow into Ontario. So we've completely displaced the Western Canadian market at this point. So this is something that Canada is dealing with right now, considering that the largest trading part of the United States doesn't need one of their key exports now, or not to that normal degree.
Steve, we've got to see you again when you're in New York. Great briefing. Stephen Shork, the Shork Report of Pennsylvania. Just fabulous. And his research there on the February jobs report about, great jobs report with revisions, a terrific jobs report, but the income makeup is gives one pause, Mike.
Yeah, it's interesting. He wades into that debate.
Yeah, he took a real right turn there. We like that within all of our guests. John Writing, thank you. Stephen Shork, thank you. Tomorrow, Mario Draghi will be our guest in the 8:30 hour. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.